everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show. And another weather record bites the dust, Mr. Fairbanks. 126 straight days over 90 degrees for our high here in Tucson.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Phoenix. Wow.
No. Yeah. If you don't like hot weather, this might not be... Might not be the place for
maybe
it.
If it's Phoenix, it might be 100 degrees instead of 90.
Yeah, it might be that. Very true. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. We're excited about the fact we've got five radio stations under one roof. It's all under the Bustos Media banner. Growing company. I mean, my goodness, look what we've acquired just recently. 101.7, The Drive. Very popular music station here in town. But this station's 1030, KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Also the place for all of our podcasts, going back to when I started the radio project almost 15 years ago, January 2011. We've got pretty much every show we have done. And hard to believe, 15th year with the radio show. We'll begin that in January, and my 37th year in radio and television in this particular market. Our live line, which we will utilize today, the number is 790-2040, and folks are welcome to call and ask a question or make a comment to Mr. Tom Horn. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partner is TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks to Dylan and the team over there. Also, the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, and we'll hear from the political reporter, Jim Nintzel of the Sentinel, at in segment three today about, about 12:35 today. But our Friday Focus interview, it'll be me and Tom Horn. I'll be flying solo here as I interview Mr. Horn, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. Previously, Mr. Horn served in the same post from 2003 to 2011. He was Arizona's Attorney General from 2011 to 2015, a graduate of Harvard and then Harvard Law School. He was a Democrat before becoming a Republican. Tom Horn, welcome back to the show.
It's always great to be with you, Bill.
You know, in 25 years of talking to you first on television and then on radio, I don't think I have ever asked you, you were a 60s Democrat, what was there one incident that said, I've had it with the Dems, I'm going to join the GOP?
Well, there were a lot of things over time, actually starting already in college, but I didn't do it till I was 50. But the immediate thing that happened was I was attending the Nucleus Club, which is in Maricopa County, the Democratic fundraising organization, of which I was president at one time. And they had a speaker who was a defense attorney defending, arguing we should be more lenient with criminals. And that did it for me. My sympathies are with the victims, not with the criminals.
All right, we've got a lot to unpack here in the next half hour or so. Let's begin with this new report from the Grand Canyon Institute, and Dr. Wells, Dave Wells, the research director, broke this story on our show on Tuesday, saying that, 60,000 families with school vouchers have unspent money in their accounts, and it totals about $360 million. Mr. Wells and the team at Grand Canyon are urging state lawmakers to reclaim the unspent funds and get them back to the general fund. Would that be a good or bad idea?
Well, the legislation is quite explicit on this subject, and I'm the administrator. I follow what the legislature says. So people who take one side or the other need to talk to legislators. I have enough controversies on my plate without getting into those legislative questions.
But just from your own personal thoughts on that, good or bad thing if it should go back to the general fund?
Yeah, I've decided to stay out of that one, Bill.
Okay, you don't want to take a stand on that one. Well, what about this one? There's always enough controversies for,
yeah,
for people.
As you know, I have plenty of controversies.
Oh, and I'm going to bring one up right now. Representative Nancy Gutierrez, who is a frequent visitor to this program, she's the House Democratic Whip. She and others are very disappointed with you, Superintendent Horn. They say you're dodging an audit over what they say were botched federal education funds distribution. What is that all about?
All right. Now, this is something I can talk about, Bill. Their position is completely ignorant and irrational. And when I explained it at the hearing before the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, they didn't absorb it. They pretended like they didn't understand it. But these are the facts. On July 1st, 2022, which is before I took office under my predecessor, they had an incompetent employee who did not obligate about $24 million of funds that should have been available to our schools. If the funds are not obligated, you can't spend them. And he was the one who did not obligate them. It was under my predecessor. And now we've applied for a waiver, which would be an extension, and we expect we'll get the money back. But it was clearly something that happened under the prior administration. And they said, well, you're trying to blame someone else. It's not a matter of blame. It's a matter of what the facts are. The facts clearly are that July 1, 2022 was the deadline. And she and one other legislator were just not absorbing the facts. They were just making things up.
Yeah, and they're saying you're just deflecting the blame that led to a budget, really budget chaos, Superintendent Horn, for nearly 200 Arizona schools.
It's not deflecting. It's stating the facts. The fact is we could not spend money that was not obligated. It was under the prior administration that they screwed it up and did not obligate that money. And that is the fact. It's not a matter of deflecting. It's not a matter of blaming. It's not a matter of he said, she said. It's a matter of what the fact is. And no one has any evidence that the fact is not that the deadline was July 1st, 2022, and they missed it, and they got it wrong, and we couldn't spend money that was not obligated. Now, we have applied now for a waiver, so we think we're going to get the money back. But this attack on me by her at the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, which was rejected by the majority there, as you know, was completely mindless, irrational attack. It was just letting partisan politics get in the way of education and facts. And I said there, listen, education is something that should be bipartisan. We should be working together to increase teacher salaries, to raise academics, to do all the things that need to be done in our schools, and not engaging in mindless political attacks that are completely contrary to the facts.
Some conservatives are calling for the abolition of the U.S. Department of Education. Is that something, Tom Horn, that you would support?
I have mixed feelings about it. I've seen the Department of Education do some things that I thought were not in the best interest of education. But, you know, they supply a lot of money to the states, and we rely on that money. So, again, that's a federal issue that's outside of my package of controversies.
These ratings keep coming out. There was another one today, and it slips my mind. I heard about it, and basically it said Arizona was ranked, I don't know, 49th or 48th among the states when it comes to public education. And typically we wind up in like the last 10% of the states. What's going on? What's the true story here?
Okay, so this was an unknown group calling themselves a consumer something that nobody had ever heard of.
Yeah, that's what I heard, the report this week.
So there is a gold standard for measuring quality of education, and it's called the National Assessment of Education Progress. It's a test given by the federal government to students in the states, and they rank us. Now, it's true we're last in funding, but we're right in the middle of the 50 states in performance on that test. So I think our teachers are doing a good job given the fact that we're not doing well in funding, but they're right in the middle of the states. Now, that's not good enough. We need to do better than being in the middle of the states. And that's why I ran for this office. And I'm totally devoted to getting better academic results. I have 15 initiatives to work on that with the schools. If you have time, I'll talk about them as many as you want.
Well, could you give me a general picture? Let's devote about a minute to this. I don't want to carve any more time because I've got a huge stack of stuff.
Okay, so we have improvement teams. When I took office, the consultant who specialized in failing schools said the schools have had any help in a number of years. And the first part of my mission statement is that we're a service organization. We're there to help. So we organize improvement teams, highly qualified teachers and principals go out to help the schools. And there's a secretary who told us that she's been here for quite some time, you know, before I was here. And she would go out to meetings with the schools, with people from the department. And it used to be they were nervous, you know, the Department of Education is here, because they sat in judgment of them. Now they're welcoming because they know the Department of Education is there to help them. We have leadership training. You show me a good school, I'll show you a good leader. So the leadership training is very important. We have data that we share with the school. So a school that is not doing well can look on our data and find a school that has the same poverty but is doing much better, and they can talk to them about getting help. Those are a few examples. But I wanted to talk about my initiatives with the legislature. Aside from my 15 initiatives with the schools, there are three things that I think are important that we're doing our best to persuade the legislature. First of all, we must raise teacher salaries. I told this to the legislature in my state of education speech this year. We're losing more teachers than are coming to the classroom. We absolutely must raise teacher salaries, and I've been working for that essentially all of my adult life. Secondly, we need to get administrators to support teachers on discipline in the schools. We survey them when they leave the profession, and a close second to salaries is a reason they left is administrators don't support them on discipline. And so, you know, kids want boundaries, but if one gets away with it, then others do, and pretty soon it's impossible to teach the class, and the teachers can't take it, and they end up leaving. And if we're going to have good education, we have to bring discipline back to the class. Third, we have to get rid of kids scrolling on their cell phones when the teacher's trying to teach them. That was a bill that I actually got passed through the legislature, and the governor vetoed it, which, in my opinion, was an irrational and irresponsible veto. And I ask your listeners, if they care about education, please send a letter to the governor's office and tell her next year, please don't veto the cell phones. And then finally, I've been using my influence to get schools to focus on academics, reading, math, science, history, rather than on distractions like race and gender politics.
All right. I want to follow up on the cell phones, the discipline, but this is a good time to take a break. When we come back, let's talk some more about specifically the cell phones and the discipline, which is why some teachers, as you admit, are leaving the profession. More with Tom Horn. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. The Superintendent of Public Instruction in the state of Arizona, Tom Horn, is on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mr. Horn wants to get cell phones out of the classroom, and I would like the superintendent to respond to a couple of points on that. Some teachers argue there's an educational value for cell phones in the classroom. Some parents say it's actually a school safety issue that their children have the cell phones with them. And thirdly, some districts say they're managing this. Your response to those three points, Mr. Horn?
Okay, remind me, what was the first one?
The first one was the educational value for cell phones.
Okay, so the bill that I pushed that as I mentioned, was actually passed by the legislature and then irrationally vetoed by the governor, provided for local determination of some of the questions. In other words, in general, we didn't want the kids scrolling through their cell phones when the teacher's trying to teach. But one exception in the bill was for valid educational purposes. And so, that's easily met. Mm-hmm. With respect to safety, this is kind of an interesting issue because the protocol, if there's a school lockdown, is to take away the cell phones. Mm. If we have an emergency, we don't want the kids on their cell phones. We want them listening to the instructions they're getting. If everyone's on the cell phones and not listening to the instructions, it's a very bad in terms of safety. And plus, if everyone's using cell phones, it could interfere with the broadband that is needed for the emergencies. It has been for a number of years the practice in the schools. If there's a school lockdown, the first thing they do is take away the cell phones, because if the kids are on the phones, that makes the situation much worse. They need to be listening to the instructions.
Are they managing it, though? Some of the districts, some districts in the state have programs for the cell phone use. Is there any evidence that local control is not working?
Well, there are districts, and I praise them, who have passed bans of the cell phones in the classroom, but many have not. And I don't think a single teacher should be required to ever teach a class while students are scrolling on their cell phones. I mean, I ask your listeners, imagine what it's like if you're trying to teach a class of students and they're scrolling on cell phones and not listening to you. So it's not adequate to say, well, there's some districts that are doing the right thing. It's true. Some districts are doing the right thing, but many aren't. And under this bill, we left with the districts a lot of the details. For example, in some states, they have banned cell phone use from the time the student has to keep this. The student has to keep the cell phone in her backpack or his backpack from the time they enter the school till the end of the school day. Others just limit it during class time, and so when in between class time, they can call. Those are the kinds of things that we left to the local schools. But we can't have any teacher being required to teach a class when students are scrolling on their cell phones. That's completely irrational and insane. And so we need a statewide law. And that makes it a lot easier on the teachers. You know, the teachers don't want to have to be arguing with the kids about the cell phones. If it's a state law, that's easy. They can say, hey, look, it's a state law.
What did the governor say? Why did she veto this, Tom Horn?
She said it was because it was up to the district, and so there was no need for it. And my response to that is what I just said. There are some districts that are doing the right thing, but many aren't. And she should not be requiring any teacher in our state to try to teach kids in a class while they're scrolling on their cell phones. That's just wrong, and it's very damaging to the very academics that we were talking about in the very beginning, what I'm doing to increase the academics so that we, instead of being in the middle of the country, we can be one of the leading states in the country. We can't do that if kids are scrolling on their cell phones.
All right. How do we get our arms around this issue of the discipline, and teachers are clearly telling you and others we're leaving the profession because they're just the kids. The kids are a problem, the discipline. Yeah, so what do we do about this one?
Well, the bill that I was supporting said that the superintendents need to keep track of all requests by teachers for discipline and a record of what was actually done. And they need to tell the teachers what discipline was done if they're sending them back to the classrooms. And if they're not supporting at least, I think it was 80% of the requests for discipline by the teachers, they need to explain it because there are appeals available. But if they can't explain it, if they're just not supporting the teachers, then they would lose one of the letters on their letter grade. So if they would otherwise be a B, they'd be a C, and so on. And so that didn't pass. There was one Republican who was holding it up with some details that he was trying to work out, and it became too late to pass it. But we're going to try again next year.
So is there some kind of, is the Arizona Education Association, is this an issue that has been raised by the AEA?
The AEA opposed it.
Why?
Well, I think they oppose everything that's a Republican initiative. They opposed, believe this or not, Matt Gress, a Republican legislator, had a bill to increase teacher salaries by $10,000 every teacher. That would have solved a lot of our problems. It would have put us in the top 10 states in the country in starting salaries. And the Teachers Association opposed it, and the president of the Teachers Association wrote an op-ed for the Republic explaining why she opposed it. Most of that article was talking about how bad Republicans are and criticizing Republicans that had nothing to do with this bill. It's really bad when instead of dealing with important education issues on a bipartisan basis, you get people just attacking something because it comes from the other party. That's crazy.
So you have teachers who are saying, or there just isn't enough discipline, but, you know, that's kind of a general, doesn't define the issue. Are some of these teachers, do they have suggestions as to what action should be imposed or steps taken to rectify the problem?
I think the bill that we proposed would have been effective. Now, some teachers I've talked to said the main thing they would want to see is if the student is sent back, the administrator needs to tell them what discipline was imposed, so at least they would know. But I don't think that's sufficient. And so we had a bill that did more. And I'm sure if it had come from a Democrat, the teachers would have been supporting it. Although we have another aspect to this. The figures I've been given is that the Teachers Association only represents 20% of the teachers, and that a majority of their members are classified employees, janitors, secretaries, and so on. And so when they opposed the raise for teachers, that one of the reasons they gave, aside from the fact that it was a Republican bill, was that there was no money provided for the classified employees, for the people that they really represent. And our response to that was, we have an emergency. We have to deal with the emergency first, which is teachers are leaving the profession faster than people are coming into the classroom. If that continues, we'll end up with zero teachers. We have to pay them more. And the districts can take care of the classified employees. They get money. They can use it for raises for the classified employees. But we need to do something on an emergency basis to help our teachers. And to everybody's incredible shock, the Teachers Association, which I think was not really representing the teachers, opposed it.
How serious is this teacher shortage? You say if this keeps up, we won't have any teachers. You have a percentage of teachers that leave the classroom every year or anything? Can you give us?
I have those numbers. I don't have them in front of me right now, but it would be a long time before we would have zero teachers left. But
yeah,
we've got to stop the trend. We can't have this trend going on. We've got to pay our teachers more. We don't want them having to work second jobs so that they can, pay their bills. We want them to be properly compensated for the very important professional work that they do, and we don't want them leaving the profession. And Matt Gress had a very good bill to do that, and the Democrats opposed it because the Teachers Association opposed it. And I, to tell you the truth, I can't understand that mentality.
All right. I keep seeing these public service announcements. We've actually run one on this radio station. They run on radio and TV where you're saying there is money to tutor students in the state of Arizona. What's that all about?
We designated about $50 million of what's called ESSER money. This is money appropriated by the Congress to make up for loss of learning during COVID for tutoring, because tutoring is the most effective way for students to do well academically. Mm-hmm. And so we're making it available for free. All they have to do is sign up. They can sign up through their districts, or they can sign up directly with private companies that provide tutoring that have contracts with us. And we want to be sure that parents know about it so they can take advantage of it. And that's why we have these public service announcements.
So you're saying that the students can get free tutoring and the parents just need to know about it, basically, right?
Exactly, yes.
All right. Academically, are we doing any better in Arizona?
Well, we'll get these, we call them the NAEP scores, National Assessment of Education Progress, in January, and we'll see. We'll see how we're doing, but I do think it's noteworthy, and what makes it this report calling us last ridiculous from this unknown group is that we're at the bottom of this of the states in what we spend, and I've always advocated more resources for our education. That's where our future is, but notwithstanding that, we're right in the middle. We're within this. We're either 1 point above or 1 point below the national average on NAEP scores, and I think that's darn good considering the
sure,
the money that we get, but it's not good enough, and that's why I'm working very hard. The reason I ran for this office, I ran for this office specifically to improve our academic score so we could do a lot better than average, which is where we are now.
All right. What is your relationship now with Tucson Unified School District? In the past, there's been some bad blood. How do you get along with Dr. Trujillo and the team that he's put together at TUSD?
Well, it's been a mixed relationship. I don't know Dr. Trujillo. Most of my interactions with Tucson, where the last time I was in this office from 2003 to 2011, But I call it a mixed relationship because I've been to a number of schools in the Tucson Unified School District to give awards to schools that are doing well academically and to praise them. And I've been an evangelist for their program called Opening Minds Through the Arts,
yeah,
which is a fantastically successful program. They're teaching the kids to play. All the kids in the schools, when they have this program, learn to play instruments. They start out with recorders and they play string instruments. And I've appeared at a school and the whole student body is out playing violins and violas and cellos to greet me.
Wow.
I think that's just fantastic, and I've evangelized that in the rest of the state. So there are a lot of good things happening. The source of tension has been the emphasis on race and gender politics under the heading of CRT, critical race theory, which is an explicit program under ethnic studies.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Sorry, Superintendent Horn. Any closing thoughts? Give you a few seconds here.
Oh, I don't get the whole hour?
No, not today, actually, because I've got a segment three coming up with Jim Nintzel. We need to talk about issues.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me say this.
Okay.
You know, the media like to cover the controversies, and I understand that it's more interesting for
sure.
people. But I think people need to know that 90% of my efforts and of the efforts of the department go into helping the schools do better academically. That's what we're all about. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that the public know that.
All right. We'll look forward to our next visit, Superintendent Horn. Thanks.
And I want to add, I would like to do that on a bipartisan basis. And I'm always open to doing it bipartisan, and it upsets me when I get irrational attacks just because of partisanship.
Like the one we talked about earlier in the program?
Yeah.
All right.
Where they had the facts completely wrong.
Okay. Superintendent Horn, I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Horn with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll go to Jim Nintzel after we take the break. Lots to talk about with Mr. Nintzel, the political specialist, political reporter at TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Wow, the hour is just flying by here. Our thanks to Superintendent Tom Horn, who says he's being unfairly attacked by Representative Nancy Gutierrez and other Democrats over this federal education funds distribution. Jim Nintzel joining me on the live line right now, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Jim is the political reporter for the TucsonSentinel.com, and his part of his salary anyway is from Report for America, correct, Jim?
Yeah, they provide half of it, and the other half is raised here locally by supporters of local journalism who believe that operations like the Tucson Sentinel are important to our community. And I think as we see more and more of the traditional media facing cutbacks and changes in direction and just really reducing the news coverage that's available to Tucsonans, organizations like the Sentinel, and we're also seeing a similar one with the Tucson Luminaria and the Tucson Agenda, and these groups are really helping fill that void that the old mainstream media used to take care of.
I guess I need to carve out a little bit of time when I do my ballot at the Buckmaster Bungalow kitchen table. I'm looking at a supersized ballot coming up here.
You really are. Pima County officials announced this week that we are going to have a 4-page ballot to go through. And it's something a little different. It's going to be on two separate sheets.
What?
So some folks are, obviously on this the active early voter list, and starting October 9th, those ballots will go out in the mail to everyone who signed up on that. And when you get your ballot in the mail, if you're one of those voters and you open it up, it's going to be 4 pages. So the first page will be all the elected officials who are up for election, and then the back of that card we'll start with the propositions, and then we'll have another page and another card that it also has front and back propositions all on it. There's 13 statewide propositions, many of them placed on the ballot by the Arizona legislature. And then there are, I think, up to 6 local questions regarding school budgets and whatnot. Mm. And then you're going to have, a lot. I think they're saying most ballots people will have 33 races to pick through, 33 or 34 races to sort through. So it's a long list, and they're saying, make plans to sort your way. There's going to be sample ballots. You can go to PimaVote.com and pick up, take a look at what your ballot's going to look like. You should be getting one in the mail as well, so you can take a look at that to kind of start doing your homework. Of course, I'd advise folks to go to TucsonSentinel.com to learn more about the candidates, but there's many other sources. And as you go ahead and start marking your ballot, you might figure some folks are going to want to go on election day, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that Pima County has done lately is that they have created these voting centers. It's not the old go to your neighborhood precinct and you have to vote there situation anymore. You can now go to any of these 126 polling centers around the county, and they can print a ballot for you right there that's got all of your specific jurisdictions and races on it, and you mark it and hand it back to them. So if that's the direction you want to go, just be prepared. Maybe do your homework a little bit ahead of time, because it's going to take a little while, I think, to mark your way through all of these questions.
These questions, I thought, were pretty much, resolved, but I keep hearing about this open primary ballot proposition.
Yeah, and that's got a real legal wrinkle. Opponents of that, and including the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, say that there are duplicate signatures on the petition sheets that were signed in order to get this on the ballot. This is that initiative that would basically have everybody run in a single primary ahead of the election, rather than a Democratic primary and a Republican primary. So it's more of that jungle primary thing that they've done over in California and has been in place elsewhere. And the idea that supporters say would start to break the stranglehold that the extremes have on the primary process, where only the most dedicated voters come out and vote. And by the time we get around to the general election, the choices are pretty limited. So the idea is, and I don't know how well it would work in practice, but put them all together, and it's like pick up all the bugs in the forest, I guess, and put them in a jar together and see what happens, like when you're a kid. Apparently the polling shows that this idea and concept is pretty popular. But there is this opposition. The Supreme Court, the lower courts have said, yeah, it's going on the ballot. But the opponents say they'll take it to the Supreme Court. And this question about whether there were enough signatures or not they're not giving up their legal fight on that front just yet. So we'll see which way that one goes. But the legislature put another thing on the ballot to compete with it, saying that we'll stick with partisan primaries. So even if it stays on the ballot, there's some question of whether it would become law. It would not become law if the other proposition gets more votes. So it's going to be quite a battle.
Hey, I want to ask about Senator Wadzak's day in court. She had a day in court. Does she have another one? Another day in court?
She does. This was just an arraignment to plead. And she came in with her lawyer. And this is a speeding ticket. Dylan Smith, my colleague over at Tucson Sentinel, broke this story back in July that Senator Wadzak was pulled over racing down Speedway Boulevard in excess of 70 miles an hour on a Friday night in her Tesla.
And to get home.
Told the officer, she had to get home quickly in order to charge her Tesla. And apparently the home she was racing to is her old home where she said she didn't live anymore. And there's some, that's a whole nother question. You can read about it, of course, in the Sentinel. But and Dylan did point out in that story, he did speak with someone from Tesla who points out that driving faster in a Tesla does not, it actually uses more power than driving slowly. But all that aside, she claims she is, that this is a plot by the mayor of Tucson and the city attorney I'm not sure what the exact plot is, but, she feels as though she's being persecuted for her political beliefs. And she promises over the speeding ticket to subpoena the mayor and mm-hmm. the city attorney and the police chief. And it's quite a spectacle over a speeding ticket. But certainly not taking the responsibility for going a little too fast in an area with a lot of pedestrians.
Wanted to carve out a minute or two to talk about Carolyn Campbell. She's had an amazing career as an environmental activist. I guess she is officially retiring.
Yes. Carolyn, I first met her in the early 90s when she was working for Molly McCaslin in the city council offices.
Yeah.
And, working on a lot of environmental stuff there. But in the later 90s, she became head of something called the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection. And that was really a driving force behind the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. She's been involved in, she was one of the members of the Citizens Advisory Committee on the RTA, really has established herself as the voice of environmentalism here in Pima County. And she's still going to serve on the board of the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection, but she's not going to be the executive director anymore. And I think she had a lot of respect really across the board for her straightforward dealings with people as a lot of this policy stuff has been hashed out in our community. And I know it seems like there's a whole lot of folks moving on from what they used to do in this town and a lot of new faces coming up over the last 5 or 6 years. So Carolyn's one of the ones who we'll be saying goodbye to, has a big farewell party over at the Whistle Stop Depot in downtown on Saturday night.
Oh, well, we want to wish her well. Of course, over the years, you and I have interviewed her numerous times. I'd almost say dozens of times. So, yeah, she will be missed, but I'm sure she's still going to have a pretty active voice here in town. You know, I first heard about Rosemont, Supervisor Ray Carroll, then supervisor, brought it to my attention on the TV show back in, 2007, and it's still a story, isn't it?
It is. My colleague Paul Ingram covered the latest court wrestling with that. And, of course, the original Rosemont plan was on the east side of the Santa Rita Mountains down there, and they needed to get some Forest Service land in order to dump their tailings, and that's been tied up in court. But they purchased their own property on the other side of the mountains, the side that faces Green Valley over there on the west side. And that's an area where they can pretty freely mine, but there is some state land, and they're hoping to run some tailings pipes across those. And apparently there were some open meeting violations in the efforts to acquire these permits, and opponents of it, to say the Scenic Santa Rita folks, took it to court and won this week decision regarding the state land department has to review that decision to allow the tailings to be carried across the property. And I don't know if they'll just come back and revisit the decision and go ahead and pass it along, or if there'll be more roadblocks in Rosemont's way, but they certainly seem to have had a lot of delays in being able to start their operation.
On and on that story goes. All right, Jim Nintzel, we will look for your work and your colleagues, Dylan Smith, and the team that's been assembled at TucsonSentinel.com. Wish you well. Thanks, Jim.
Extraordinary work that Dylan and the entire operation down there does. I'm lucky to be part of it.
All right, TucsonSentinel.com. Have a great weekend, Jim.
Hey, thank you, Bill, and thanks for letting me be part of your show as well.
Oh, well, thank you. Always a pleasure. We'll take a break. Dan Gibson is standing in the wings, on the live line wings, to talk about Weekend Watch right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Time for Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And if I could get the perfect forecast for a weekend forecast over in Silver City, I think I've got it for you. Mid-70s during the day and then mid-40s now in the evening hours on Saturday. Perfect weather. Time to take that ride over to Silver City. About a three-hour drive, and then, my goodness, go hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. How about a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument? Start your planning now, southwestnewmexico.org. Autumn in the land of enchantment. Let's go now to Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. My goodness, when I see mid-70s, mid-40s at night, perfect for Silver City.
It's true. And I will say, if you're a bibliophile, there's a great bookstore there. I can't remember the name, but I picked up like a couple books I've been looking for, some first edition stuff. The shopping, Silver City, underrated. The antique stores, the bookstores, great selection all the way around.
Yeah, it's just a great outing, so check it out, Silver City. What do we got going here in the old Pueblo?
Well, speaking of the land of enchantment, the buffet's 90th anniversary is this weekend. The buffet, one of the few remaining bars open at 6 a.m. in Tucson. They will be celebrating there at 538 East 9th Street from noon to 5 tomorrow. There'll be live music. They're actually, it's a United Way fundraiser, which is makes perfect sense. Drink specials, live music, and a food truck, including raffles for prizes. So celebrate with the fine people at the buffet. I think the official title is the Buffet Bar and Crock Pot, but I think the crock pot's long gone. But a true Tucson classic there on 9th Street.
Yeah, the buffet has been around forever. All right, what else?
If you haven't made a mistake at the buffet, you're barely a Tucsonan, I think. Going all the way the other opposite side of town, at 9420 East Golf Links this weekend, Boba Cuckoo is opening, which is a brand new boba shop. But it's actually kind of an interesting thing because it is sort of a collision of all these sort of Asian wonders. It is a dim sum place, a boba shop, a Japanese arcade, and more. Also, they have waffles, I hear. They will have discounted drinks, their dim sum snacks, games and giveaways, all happening at 9420 East Golf Links Saturday and Sunday at Boba Cuckoo Cuckoo. I can't quite figure that out, but it sounds like a blast.
Sounds like a winner. So a couple of great suggestions, the buffet and then that, and then what else?
You know what? I'm a big cribbage fan, and every once in a while I'm like, I wish there were a place to play cribbage. Well, this Saturday I will be occupied with a TMC event, but if I were not, I would be going to the cribbage tournament at Dragoon Brewing on Grant Road, West Grant. It is happening. The warm-up games start at noon. They will go over the rules, and the matches begin at 1. Limited space this Saturday for the cribbage tournament, so you're going to want to get there early, sign up. It seems like there was no way to sign up online. You do have to be in person, but I hope somebody takes real control of that cribbage tournament on my behalf, really shows those people's what's what as they try to get to 120 points.
Wow. Cribbage still there's still a market for it, I guess, right?
Apparently. I mean, I think it's so delightful. Like, it's what a fun way to spend a Saturday. I mean, you could also catch the buffet after that and then go to the boba place on
there
Sunday.
There you go.
Really a full weekend all happening.
All right, Dan Gibson, have a great weekend. Thanks.
Thanks, you too.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thank you to Tom Fairbanks, who does such a great job engineering and producing our program, and really the entire team here at KVOI and Bustos Media. I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody a great weekend.